Not that we should confuse a bunch of mercenaries for the general.
Hey, Magnum PI, I love it.
Well, no, this is 18. Yeah.
Well, 18, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I'd probably be the leader there. The guy with the cigar. What was his name?
Oh, my.
See? I couldn't be Barabbas because, you know, he had all the gold chains, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now you got me really confused.
Hannibal.
Hannibal.
Yeah, that's who. It was Hannibal.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
Well, 18 theme for an 18 edition of In Focus here on Thursday.
Perfect.
Yep, Dr. Marty Vanier in, and now we got retired General Perry Wiggins, Executive Director of Governor's Military Council, former Commanding General of 1st Infantry Division at Fort Riley. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, you definitely got the 18 with Marty. I'm not too sure, but good morning.
Well, we got a lot of excitement at Fort Riley starting tomorrow. You got the Secretary of the U.S. Army coming to town.
Yeah, actually, he gets here tonight, and we'll have an opportunity to meet with him and socialize. And, you know, he's one of the most important guys as a member of the team there with the Chief of Staff of the Army. So I don't know if this is his first visit out to Fort Riley. You know, he was a former infantryman, served in the 101st in Desert Storm. And then, of course, retired, I believe, as lieutenant colonel. So not new to the Army or to how we operate, and it'll be great to have him here to show him really not only Fort Riley but the community and how it supports our servicemen and women.
And that's Mark T. Esper. He's the 23rd Secretary of the U.S. Army. He was actually sworn in November 17, 2017, on my birthday. Actually, my birthday is November 17.
There you go.
But when was the last time that the Secretary of the U.S. Army visited Fort Riley?
You know, if I was to tell you, I'd probably be guessing and speculating. But I don't think we've had a visit by the Secretary in a long time. You know, we had the Civilian Aid to Secretary of the Army's regional conference at Fort Riley not too long ago. Mark Edwards and John Montgomery, who are both Civilian Aides to Secretary of the Army, hosted that particular event here in the Central Flint Hills. But I don't think the secretary at that point in time had been appointed. You know, we had an acting secretary who's now the assistant secretary or the under. And so I think it's been a considerable period of time before we've had or since we've had the Chief of Staff of the Army or the Secretary of the Army visit Fort Riley.
And what does that mean for Fort Riley? Not only maybe from a morale standpoint, but just a great opportunity to speak with somebody that's pretty high up the food chain.
Sure. You know, I mean, the bottom line is it's a great opportunity for people to come in and break the paradigm that when you're located in the central United States that you can't be a power projection platform. That's not true, especially with Fort Riley. You know, we talked in the past about Fort Riley having a main line from Union Pacific sitting right on Fort Riley and can accommodate and load up to 700 rail cars at one time and push those south to Beaumont in Texas for boats, for example. So it can load up a brigade-sized element, get it on the train, push it out and off the installation, and get it to a port about as fast as installations that are sitting on the east or west coast. That's pretty significant when you think about it. And then there's three aerial port of debarkations or embarkations. You know, we have Manhattan, which is right here. You know, Jesse Romo runs that particular facility. It's a great facility. We have Salina Airport run by Tim Rogers, and then we have Topeka as well that serve Fort Riley for what we call Graytail, strategic airlift that comes in, loads up the division and elements and equipment and personnel, and they fly off to wherever that unit's needed, anywhere in the world. So this will be a great opportunity to bring in senior leadership from our Army and show them and showcase the great efforts and work done by some great Americans out there on post that work every day. I mean, our deployability folks out there on post, Scott Bird and company, have been awarded 8 out of 9 times by Forces Command at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the deployability award, number one in our Army, as being the post that can get a unit up and out very rapidly. They've won that award 8 out of 9 times.
And up and out to go anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. That's right. That's where we're at today, as you well know. I mean, we are in a more uncertain time than when I was in uniform, where we knew our adversaries were the Russians for the first three quarters of my career. we trained against these folks called Krasnovians every time. Now, we knew who the Krasnovians were.
Krasnovians. I don't think I've heard that term.
That's right. Krasnovians. Those old Army guys out there know who the Krasnovians were, because every exercise we did were against these particular folks. They sound and looked a lot like the Russians. Their organization and their equipment was a lot like the Russians, and how they fought was a lot like the Russians, but we called them Krasnovians. But we knew when I was in uniform very early on that our adversary was that. Now we have a hybrid enemy. We have near-peer competitors that have forces and formations and armies similar to our own. We have those who fight in a guerrilla-type aspect, a counterinsurgency-type aspect. And our soldiers have to be ready to do that and be able to respond anywhere in the world.
So near-peer adversaries.
That's right. That's right.
Like China, Russia.
Gotcha. Folks that have tanks and Bradley or infantry fighting vehicles, or they have fighter aircraft. So, we have been at a luxury in some of the fights that we've had where we have had air superiority. In the next fights, in some of those near peer, we have to gain and maintain air superiority, which means there's going to be a fight in the air. We haven't had that in a long time. Normally, when our Air Force takes off and our fighters in the air, if they do have an Air Force, they turn and go the other direction. That's not necessarily the case in the future. That's why it's important that these budgets militarily, we get them to a point to where we make it that our military is the best in the world. We have the best soldiers, the best airmen in the world. We got to have the best equipment in the world. We don't ever want to come in second in a fight. And so that's why these budgets and what our Congress is doing and what our president is doing is extremely important to get that right.
Are we still there as far as equipment? Are we still in that number one spot?
Well, I would like to think so. I mean, I don't know what I don't know. And what you don't want to do is find that out on a battlefield. We've always been in situations in battles, and Vietnam is a perfect point. We had Cobra helicopters that learned the hard way that they had surface-to-air missiles that were introduced by the Russians, right? That we then had to counter by developing aviation survivability equipment on board the aircraft that defeated those systems. So it is a constant evolution and adaptation, and you got to be extremely flexible. And that technology that we're developing, we have to apply every single opportunity we get to maintain that edge.
Since we're kind of on that topic of kind of talking about the foreign relations and diplomacy, as far as the landscape that you see now, always ever-changing almost by the minute or hour anymore, but it looks like there's a lot of positive things going on with North Korea. At least it seems like that at the moment. Time will tell on that.
Yeah.
And just, again, on the Russian front, that's always something that's still kind of in our minds right now.
I've always been one, like I said, always trained against the Russians. I've always been sort of suspect on how good of friends they were ever going to be. I mean, it's hard to change and break that paradigm. Now, as far as Korea is concerned, opinions are like belly buttons. I have one. I just always say that individual is unpredictable. So everybody's there with holding their breath, hoping for the best, and you always hope for the best. Nobody prays for peace more than a soldier. Nobody. If you've ever seen combat, you'll know that the individuals that have experienced that always pray for a peaceful outcome. But in this particular case, I'm hoping that all the negotiations and everything go good, because I think that it's at best for the world. You don't need somebody like him to have the capability of having a nuclear weapon.
And it's definitely been amazing to watch the handshakes with South Korean's president, that a hug even, an embrace, and stepping on South Korean soil. You hope that that's something that's going to continue, but you do wonder in the back of your head, it's like, is there some other game being played here?
Yeah, that's human nature. I mean, right. And we as Americans have always been ones to look at things through a critical mindset, and that's healthy. I think that's important. We got to be careful. We got U.S. forces standing on the ground over there. They've been there for a long time. We'd love to see a peaceful resolution to that conflict and peace declared. And then, maybe that'll result in our formations be able to come back and position those back here in the States. Who knows? It opens up a lot of opportunities. But you got to remember, we did the same thing with Russia when the wall came down. We removed a lot of forces and formations out of Germany because we said Russia's no longer a threat. And now our leaders are challenged with how do we get formations back in after what they did in Crimea and the Ukraine, in order to act as a deterrent once again. And we don't have that infrastructure over there anymore. We don't have those bases that we had in the past. And so we have folks like the 2nd Brigade Combat Team out of Fort Riley that's deployed to Europe, operating out of Germany and going to places like Poland and the Ukraine and other places to serve as a deterrent. I think we got to sit back and really temper action with wisdom with Korea as far as military formations.
And then going back with Russia, so much of Russia's leadership is still kind of entrenched in some of that those Cold War days. A lot of the same folks that were involved at the intelligence agencies back then.
Putin is Putin,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, the guy drives around on a horseback with no shirt on and wrestles bears. I mean, I'm not really sure how stable that is.
With that, let's go ahead and take our last break of the hour. We'll come back and talk more with retired General Perry Wiggins, Executive Director of the Governor's Military Council, right here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN.